it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, let's get into the Century Tournament of Champions. We'll talk about our picks really quick. So Colin Morikawa, one of my picks, top five, paid a little bit on the Bet365 app for the each way bet. He is looking great, leading early Thursday, but we always know, isn't it better when your guy's like has a good round Thursday, but it's not like leading? I know he wasn't maybe the official leader by the time it was all said and done at the end of Thursday. I think he was T2. But I never feel good about a winning pick when he's leading on Thursday.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I was in the same boat. Him and Schauffele both started off hot. And actually, Schauffele ended up in the final group and then proceeded to lose by like seven shots, I want to say. So it was actually funny because the final group was Akshay Bhatia, Xander Schauffele and Chris Kirk, and Akshay and Xander were nowhere near the lead by the end of the round. So it was kind of a funny dynamic, like watching these dudes, finish up the last few holes, but they really had no shot. And it was just a birdie fest all week. I mean, as everybody could see by the leaderboard, it was, just a shootout, and like that's kind of fun, but at the same time it's not, because like Spencer said, Xander Schauffele and Colin Morikawa both there after day one, but basically you had to shoot seven under every day to keep pace, which is not an easy thing to do, and that's why these guys are on the PGA Tour. But courses like this, it's just not as much fun to me because I mean, Chris Kirk, let's just get right to it. Chris Kirk makes 30 birdies and one bogey all week. You can't tell me that course is hard. No matter, I know they're PGA Tour players, I know they're the best in the world, but there's not a single course on the PGA Tour that's considered, somewhat difficult. And I will say there was no wind, so the wind obviously makes a big difference over there, as Mark Rolfing likes to tell us every year. Because nobody knew it was windy in Hawaii. He acts like he's the king of fucking Hawaii, which just sends me over the edge every broadcast I listen to him. But anyways, the course was just very easy, and it was just a birdie fest. And I personally don't think they're that much fun to watch.
Yeah, they're not as – this tournament is known for that. Of course, we talked about it last week with Cam Smith and Jon Rahm going at it. And then – or 2 years ago, and then last year, Rahm winning it shooting 10 under. And that's kind of what Chris Kirk had to do. He shot 8 under on Sunday to hold off Sahith Theegala, who shot 10 under, and Jordan Spieth, who shot 8 under by 1 and 2 strokes, respectively. So, out of the worst round, out of the guys that finished in the top five was 7 under by Byung-Hung An on Sunday. So a birdie fest nonetheless. And it's crazy because the golf course is quote unquote hard, right? And the rating of it. And like, if you just send any random person out there to play the golf course, it's not easy. But for these guys, just with the way the you don't see a ton of undulation on PGA Tour courses, and this is why. You can turn, 300-yard drives into 350-yard drives because there's speed slots and there's different areas where these guys can land it where no one else can.
Yeah, there's definitely I mean, they say the course rating is 77 from the tips, which is, by definition, you walk out to your run-of-the-mill golf course and the rating is 77, you're expecting you're in for a gauntlet of a day, and granted it is a par 73. So that does take it, everybody just automatically thinks 72 or whatever. So the fact that it is a par 73 makes a bit of a difference, but I can tell you even I've played Bear Creek in Colorado and that rating, I think it is a par 71 maybe, or no, it might be 72, but the rating is 77. And I guess it's just all how you interpret a golf course. But I can tell you just right off the bat that no dude on the PGA Tour is shooting that number at Bear Creek like Chris Kirk did this week on the PGA Tour. That's one of the hardest golf courses I've ever seen, ever stepped foot on. So it's all relative. And it makes you wonder where they get these ratings from. If they base them off your average player, if they base them off of, off multiple different levels, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me when all they talk about is how hard this course is. And then these dudes go out and Sungjae Im set all-time record for birdies in a four-round event. He made 34 birdies this weekend. So what is that, an average of 8.5 a day? He's basically birdieing half of the holes in the golf tournament. And he didn't win.
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, when you put it like that, it's fucking bananas. The fact that he set an all-time, wasn't it Rom that set the all-time scoring record here last year, or was that Cam Smith 2 years ago?
Cam Smith 2 years ago at 34 under.
Okay. So yeah, think about that. 34 under, that is legitimately under par on 48% of the holes collectively, it just blows my mind.
Yeah. It was quite the finish. A couple of guys at the top of the leaderboard too. Jordan Spieth, kind of good to see him. I know we've talked about this being an easy course, but Jordan knows how to make a lot of high numbers. And he shot 8 under the last day, third place solo third. So good to see for Jordan Spieth on, maybe a reclaimed 2024 for him. Sahith Theegala, of course, a guy we've talked about a lot, up and coming star on the PGA Tour. And then Kirk, it was good to see because we talked shit about it last week. I was personally happy to see somebody that was an actual champion from the prior year win the Tournament of Champions.
It's funny because they don't even call it the Tournament of Champions anymore. And that's what had me fucked up. I was trying to put it on. I was trying to tweet it out and find their Century Tournament of Champions. They just call it the Century now. It's not even the Tournament of Champions. So it definitely gave it a little bit more of a bleh vibe. And as we discussed last week with all these dudes that are playing that didn't win last year, it just gives it less of an elite, feeling of a tournament. Where they just kind of throw anybody willy nilly in there. I will say, too, with the scoring, you could tell how easy the place was. I think it was 19 or 20 under got you inside the top 25. And then Vincent Norman finished last place. If I'm not mistaken, he made 15. Did he make 15 birdies and 3 bogeys? I want to say he finished at 12 under.
Six under for the event.
Okay, 9 birdies, 3 bogeys, and was far and away at the bottom of the the next guy was Hideki Matsuyama at 8 under, and then you have Lee Hodges at 9, Ricky Fowler at 10. But yeah, anything to get inside the top 25 was 20 under par. So it is like a pitch and putt for these dudes over there. And a few of these holes, you know, like I actually thought it was pretty cool what they did on 18. Did you see? I know it was for sure on Sunday, but I'm sure they did it throughout the week. They had a drone in the middle of the 18th hole, kind of near the landing spot, to follow the ball to see how long it rolled, because I think there was a few drives that didn't stop for 45 seconds after they hit the ground, because that's how sloped that fairway is.
That's an insanity. And the one thing we can say positively about this course that we've said for years is it ends on a par five. So I guess that's fun. Guess that's a win for Kapalua.
Right. No, it's a great par five. And Kevin Kisner actually was like, I'm aiming as far right as possible, because Chris Kirk was laying up on 18 with a one shot lead. And I will say that was the shot of the tournament for him, was on 17. Sahith had it tied for the lead, and he Chris Kirk stuffed a five iron in there from like 205 to like 2 feet, like a no-brainer, tap and birdie on 17 to give him a one shot lead. Because as easy as that hole is to birdie, there's definitely still trouble, like especially Chris Kirk being the dude that really works it right to left. If he had to get something really hooking, he could have easily dumped one in that hazard area, you know, on the left side of the green, and could have been staring six in the face. So the fact that he only had to make par on 18, but you know, that's kind of a even Kisner said the same thing. Kisner was like, you know, all week you try to go out and make all these birdies, and he's like, it almost might be harder to try to make par here at 18, because you know, you're just thinking birdie everything all week, and then all Kirk needed was par to win on a relatively easy par five, and he did end up getting out of there with a par. But it's a crazy mindset where you're just thinking birdie, 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 birdie all week, and then you come down to the 72nd hole, you're like, shit, I only need a par. What do I do with that? How do I make par?
Yeah, is it? It's more of like a trying to take your foot off of the gas almost and play not to lose. And granted, he ended up winning, so it worked out well for him, but they're pedal to the metal all week just trying to make birdies. And that sounds like the name of the game of golf, but a lot of PGA Tour events, you know, if you got to talk to someone playing the event themselves, they'd say, you know, and every round of golf goes differently than we expect and everybody expects. That's just the name of the game. But like, they map out the golf course and say, okay, this hole, I'm going to be happy with par. And this hole, like, I'm going to try to avoid bogeys here and try to avoid bogeys here and be happy with pars here. This is the hole where I need to go make birdie. It seems like at the tournament, the Century, I'm not going to call it the Tournament of Champions because it's not. The Century in Kapalua, it's like, I expect to make birdie on almost every hole, or at least have a shot at it, other than, you know, I think there's a long par three, which are always tough. But these guys are full pedal to the metal from day one, you know, and starting the year off, it's just adding to those birdie numbers for the entirety of the year.
Yeah, 100%. It's a lot of birdies. And then, you know, obviously we'll talk about next week, tomorrow on the pod, but, the Sony Open's a completely different golf course. You're hitting a lot of irons off the tees. You know, if you're hitting drivers, you're cutting corners. And I hate to say it, like, Jordan Spieth, I know that he's a fan favorite, but you think he played well because the fairways are all like 80 yards wide out there. That's the other thing too with this golf course, is the guys that have played it before have a huge leg up, which, you know, it's a challenge to get there. At least in years past, you had to win on the PGA Tour to be able to play Kapalua, at least in the tournament, you know. So the fact that those guys, a lot of these guys are kind of going in cold, having never played here before, and then get thrown out there, it makes it a little bit tougher for a younger dude, you know, that hasn't won and played there a bunch, like Jordan Spieth or a few other guys. So there's definitely, it's one of those courses you feel like you really need to know to succeed. And so you rarely see like a first time guy go out there and win, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a guy, you got to have to see this golf course multiple times, realize how far you can hit the ball. And speaking of that, we have a little, you know, let's give a round of applause to our boy Max Homa. Longest drive in the history of the ShotLink era, which started tracking shots back in 2003. So you weren't even double digits yet. You're a little, you didn't even know what golf was at that point. Neither did I.
No.
But 477 yards on the seventh hole. And I guess Max was kind of humble about it in general. They asked him about it. And so he gets to hold that, you know, and he's kind of the record holder of the random things that nobody cares about. I mean, not that nobody cares about this, but, you know, he's now going to be like, I don't think anyone's going to sniff this until Kapalua again next year. It's one of the only places, if not the only place, where this is even remotely fathomable.
Well, I will say, depending on how firm they get Castle Pines for the BMW, that let's put that in the memory bank, because number one at Castle Pines Golf Club is straight down the hill, par five. Where I can't remember the cross bunkering, or I don't even know if there is cross bunkers, but if it's firm, I bet somebody could get close to touching it on that hole. Part of the reason why they made that course so much longer and tougher, just to, you know, equip itself for the PGA Tour. But yeah, 470 something, no matter how you slice it, that's a bomb. And it just shocks me that, like, in all the years of Dustin Johnson and, you know, Bubba Watson at the Phoenix Open and, like, all these golf, you know, not necessarily golf courses that lend itself to it, because it's not surprising that it came at Kapalua, but just all these bombers of years past that never got one out there that far. I mean, I remember Dustin Johnson back in his day, that I think it may have been the same par four. Is it kind of the downhill, like, dogleg right?
Yep, where you just clear the whole right side and you can go basically straight for the green on a 460-yard hole.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, that was the hole that Dustin Johnson hit it to, like, a foot, almost made a hole in one on a par four there, like probably 4 or 5 years back. So I don't know if they've made it longer since then or what, but I remember that hole distinctly because I remember Dustin Johnson, like, grazing it for a hole in one on a par four, which I don't think's ever been done on the PGA Tour. I actually think it's only been done by dudes that play by themselves at your local golf club on, like, a weekday afternoon.
Yep, that's the only time it's been done in the history of golf. Never witnessed, only heard about.
Exactly. I was going to say, did you hear anything? Did you, like, see anything about Kevin Kisner? What did you think?
Well, that's where I was going to go next is, so I watched the tournament, but I was at a sports book for most of watching it, so I didn't get the sound. They weren't too keen on NFL Week 18 to put the sound on of
Sir, could I get the volume up on this one?
Yeah, the Century. But I did see some tweets, and there. So I got some tweets here that I saw from the weekend in Kevin Kisner. First of all, the Jordan Spieth one was hilarious. So Jordan Spieth had a 3-footer. Kisner just said, "It's 3 feet, Jordan. Just knock it in, bud." And then he ends up missing it. So that was hilarious. And just some other tweets talking about how great Kisner was in general, just because he's so real. So this one from Super 70 Sports: "For the 38 of you who are also watching golf, NBC needs to lock down Kevin Kisner long term. He's already twice as good as Azinger and the definition of a guy who you want to have a beer with. Could be this sweet bastard's gig for the next 20 years."
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, I personally saw this coming. Like, it's just from everything that we've heard about him in, you know, tour circles and everything you hear about from him in the media, it just makes complete sense that this dude is, I wouldn't blame him. I mean, like that dude said, he's already a million times better than Paul Azinger. I think he may have been the worst announcer in the history of just TV in general. I did have a guy tweet us, because I tweeted about Kisner and where is it? I tweeted about Kisner from our golf account. Oh yeah, and this Judd Jitsu. It looks like he's an Arizona dude, so Tempe AZ, love that. Thanks for following. So Brandel was asking Kevin Kisner, and it was actually pretty funny because Brandel was, like, asking Kevin Kisner how he prepared for broadcasting, like, like he was going through like Navy SEAL training. He's like, what did you do to get ready for this? Like, he acts like it's the hardest job in the world. I'm like, oh my God, Brandel. Like, it just the way he was saying shit, and like, how do you, you know, everybody else makes you look so good. How do you prepare and how do you do? It's like, dude, shut the fuck up, man. He's going to call a golf tournament. Like, he knows these dudes. He knows this golf course. He could just show up and, you know, provide better insight than, and that's kind of sad, the fact that the bar is so low for announcers in golf. And he was like the great Johnny Miller, how are you going to prepare off the course like you did on the course? I'm like, Jesus Christ, nobody liked listening to Johnny Miller either. I was ready for that old conch shell to get off the fucking TV 20 years ago. As soon as I could hear words, I was done listening to Johnny Miller. But basically Kisner said to Brandel, Brandel was like, is this something you'd want to do long term? And Kisner goes, we'll see if they even let me come out again tomorrow. Who knows what's going to come out of my mouth out here today. And just that is the kind of authenticity, obviously, that you crave from any sort of announcer. But then this dude responded, Judd on Twitter, he said, dude bombed hard. And I was like, did he? I didn't see much of it like Thursday. And he goes, he was on Golf Channel just before and pretty sure he admitted that he rarely watches pro golf and kept doubting himself. I'm like, I don't think he's necessarily doubting himself. Obviously, this is his first time doing it, so he doesn't have a lot of experience. But like I said earlier, I don't think that he was super nervous. The thing he was probably most nervous about, which is something I think we could relate to, is just not letting cuss words fly. Like you can't be talking like you're talking to your boys. Like, that's why I don't think I'll ever be able to go on the radio or anything. Like, I can't be on any regular scheduled programming TV sort of thing. But other than that, I think, you know, like, realistically, let me ask you this. Do you think a lot of these guys watch the PGA Tour? You know, do you think they are sitting there watching golf on a Sunday when they're, you know, when they have a day off and they work 4 or 5 days a week? You think they're going to spend their one day off and watch those other dudes out there play? Like, I think that's asinine.
No, I don't think they do. I think we've seen clips where I think the only time that these guys watch the actual PGA Tour or whatever is when a golf tournament that they're in, like they're in the afternoon round and they're watching how the morning round is going. Like that part of it is, I think, where they, you know, they're trying to get, you know, some insight for their themselves in the event, and like how can they play, you know, a few holes better, or how they can strategize their day going forward. But no, I kind of doubt that these guys actually watch themselves. A comment from Nathan here. It's really too bad that P. Reed sued himself instead of getting a few nickels out of Brandel. I think Brandel's like, he's unfortunately like borderline untouchable, even as bad as he's been, until he like actually went, if he were to actually go to the Live Tour and commentate for them, which I don't think they want anyways, like that would be the only thing that would make Brandel semi-hated.
Yeah,
in the older circles of the golf world, of the people that still watch the PGA Tour every single week, know who the commentators are. You know, I bet Kisner he's going to be new blood for a lot of people our age that pay attention to golf, and a lot of the fans that have seen some of Kisner's stuff in the past. And obviously, he's been on other golf podcasts of. You know, the demographic of our age and younger golfers that people really enjoy. But I do think it's going to take the old heads watching golf tournaments a while to get used to him. And we actually have a video here. This is from the Golf Channel on Twitter, and it was all Kisner's best moments from his first day on the call. So let's take a listen to this. This should be good.
It's Kis going to broadcast school.
You know, they were looking for people to try out, and I needed a trip to Hawaii anyway. So it worked out well for my schedule, and hopefully it works out well for NBC Sports, too.
Patrick asked me to help him at the President's Cup on Bermuda grass greens putting an hour and a half before the first match. I was like, seriously?
Because so many players going through the same point. What do you think of the process?
Well, it works. I mean, they can prove it to you on the putting green. I just don't have enough patience to do all this. I'm just rather look at it and hit it.
How unbelievable was it when you watch your pal Harmon win the Claret Jug over at Hoylake?
He's a bulldog, man. Whenever, as soon as those tabloids started messing with him, I'm like, you're messing with the wrong guy.
These guys are asking me how Kiz is doing just as much as I'm reporting on them, so.
I don't think I've cussed yet, have I?
No, you've been absolutely okay. Impeccable.
I think I made it. I'm not sure yet. I'll get the full rundown when I get back, but that's fun. I have an even greater respect for everybody in the TV business to produce all this and to make it happen.
So definitely some good moments from Kiz, and something that it makes the broadcast worth watching more. You know, everybody tunes into majors, but whatever the PGA Tour can do to make their product more, I think the product of everything in the world is moving a little bit more towards not as serious, not as newspapery, boring, and more to like real and fun. And that's what people can relate to. And Kiz is the perfect guy for that.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the direction that like TNT has gone in with their NBA and NHL panels, you know, for halftime and period reports and all that shit. I legitimately tune into those broadcasts just to see, you know, Shaq and Chuck go at it, and then Biz and those guys on the NHL broadcast. Like, there's such a lost appreciation for, you know, just somebody being entertaining on making something fun. Like, inherently golf is not that much fun, but Kisner is kind of one of those dudes that could come in and do that. And maybe that's, you know, fingers crossed, that's a direction that golf goes in with having a little bit more freedom to hire these funny dudes with just bigger personalities on the PGA Tour. Like, obviously they don't want to hire Patrick Cantlay or any of these wet paper towels out there that don't really have a word to say, but everybody knows who the funny guys are out there. Like, Kiz is probably, you know, top five. So bringing him on, I think it's just a perfect setup for everybody. And I think he's only on three tournaments this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think as of right now, it was just this week, and I believe he's on next week at the Sony Open too.
Okay. And I feel like there's maybe one other. I could be wrong, but overall,
Waste Management. He'll be at the Waste Management.
Oh, okay. We might run into Kiz inside the ropes. We'll chop it up a little bit with him. Now, will he be in the booth or will he be on the golf course? Is he strictly in the booth?
I think they're just keeping him to booth right now. They've got good talent on the golf course with Colton Ost and Smiley. Not as funny as Kiz, but they give that same aura. You know, they have that same, like, I was here, I wasn't that good here, but I can talk about it and continue my, you know, career broadcasting this game.
Totally. No, I agree. I think it would be hilarious to get Kiz out there walking with dudes, because he'd probably, like, he'd be the dude that would talk shit if he, you know, if a dude hit a bad shot or whatever. I feel like he'd throw a little chirp his way. So, but yeah, overall, one of the few moves that golf has made that I feel like is a, you know, an attempt to get more of our demographic of an age of people into the game.
Oh, 1,000,000%. Interesting note as well from Chris Kirk. So he switched putters right before this event. He'd been working with he's on Callaway staff, and they have new putters that are just got released to the public last November. They're AI generated faces. So now the AI has officially won a PGA Tour event. He was playing the AI. Let's see here. He was playing the AI 1 milled number 7 at the RSM Classic last year, but switched to the AI 1 milled 6 TCH, which is crank hosel mid mallet, just before this week. And now AI has officially got a dub on the PGA Tour. And it's just, you know, AI takes over so many things that we do day to day, or not us necessarily, but it was only a matter of time before it got into the golf world, and it was real heavy in the, you know, woods and drivers world before. now has gotten into the putting world, but it's basically making it, the face is now better to retain ball speed on slight miss hits and off center strikes. That's really what the AI does. It, you know, these guys don't need a ton of help on off center hits on putting, but now that I kind of read through this, maybe I need some AI help in my putting game.
Well, wasn't that Cobra putter, that fucking spaceship you had? I think that was AI like face milled, right?
No, so that was 3D printed.
Oh, that's what the difference. Okay.
Yeah. I do have one of the first, if not the first 3D printed putter of all time, but I haven't gotten into the AI game. So maybe I need to step it up and go spend $600-$700 over at in an Odyssey.
I honestly feel like AI is just a term thrown around for like not as intelligent of people to think something's worth more. Like AI generated this, like, you know, it sounds like it should be expensive, and it's like, no, some computer, just, you know, put together this algorithm in half a second and you're buying this putter for $700. Like, you're a fucking idiot. But I mean, whatever works. I just feel like AI, it's a little overused. Actually, I'm going to get off topic just real quick. So a little bit of AI info. So you know ChatGPT?
Yeah.
Which is
I'm not totally familiar with what it does, but
it's basically artificial intelligence that, like, you ask it a question, it'll answer it. You ask it to write you an essay, it'll write you an essay. Like, it'll basically answer any, you know, it's basically Google. I don't really get, you know, I'm not like super smart, but it feels like basically Google. Anywho, the New York Times is suing ChatGPT and OpenAI, two of the biggest artificial intelligence like users, for copyright infringement, because basically what OpenAI and ChatGPT do is they pull all the database of like the entire internet and put it into their algorithm. So there's all of these articles written by the New York Times that ChatGPT and OpenAI has pulled information from and used them in its algorithm. So they're suing them for like billions and billions of dollars, because you can, per one article that they infringe on like the copyright, it can be $150,000 reward. So then think about how many articles the New York Times has written, and think of all the information pulled. It's probably, you know, 10,000 articles. So multiply 150,000 times 10,000, and you've got billions and billions of dollars that OpenAI and ChatGPT are being sued for. And who knows what else is going to come out of it. But I just thought that was insane. And it kind of makes sense. Like, where the hell is OpenAI and ChatGPT getting all their information? They're just, I guess it's all public shit that's being put out on the internet. But if you're then taking it and using it and saying it's your own, you know, and then charging people a service for it, like, am I getting like too out there for you, or does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. It's just, the interesting part about it is the,
it has is that to be, this is a golf podcast and we're talking about this?
No, I mean, hey, it relates, dude. AI putters are now winning PGA Tour events. But yeah. I think it's a matter of where you say you got the information, or saying it's yours when it's not. I think that's the issue, because all the information in the world is out at our fingertips. You know, like, my son's never going to have to do his fucking homework when he's 15 years old, because there'll be some computer generated thing, or he can ask this, you know, what this math equation is. Like, it's going to be insane. But I don't know, you know, but then you get to the test and you don't have your little computer there, and then you're kind of hosed. But I think in general, AI is actually pretty cool, but I haven't dabbled into it as much as I probably should, just to know about it. But I also, like, it also kind of freaks me out, some of the stuff that it does. And it's kind of something that I like to stay away from a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's completely alarming. I mean, but if you're freaked out about what AI does, then you should probably get rid of like your Amazon Alexa and shit like that, because they're literally just listening to every single word you say at your house at all times. But that's another topic for a different day. Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm not going to out anybody, but a few of my girlfriend's coworkers have said they've started to use ChatGPT to respond like menial emails and shit. Like,
really? Just,
yeah, it just generates a response and off you go. Like, you don't have to waste, you know, you could probably save a couple hours a week not having to respond to bullshit emails.
Yeah, that's maybe I will get into fucking AI.
Maybe I do need to check this out.
That's it.
Another quick thing about Chris Kirk that I thought was interesting. They talked about it on his Instagram. He's kind of documented his journey to teach himself how to play left-handed. And he said he shot 82. His low left-handed is 82, which is by all accounts really fucking good. But I just think it's very interesting because I've actually, obviously I'm nowhere near like what Chris Kirk is. But he just like taught himself how to do it. And that's what I was trying to do, is teach myself how to swing left-handed. And it truly gives you a better understanding. Like, once you're a very good golfer one way, and I'm not calling myself very good, but once you're a good golfer one way, then you're relearning all the mechanics and feeling like a complete, like, you basically feel like a toddler when you step over to the other side of the ball, and you know, the way your body tilts and the way you turn and your arm positioning, things like that. It's pretty insane. But credit to Chris Kirk. I think he actually took like a month or a month and a half off playing right-handed and was like just playing lefty. So well, credit to ambidextrous golfers.
Amphibious golfers for the win. Also, you know, he's taking home $3.6 million. Great start to his year. With the first signature event of the PGA Tour season. Also, from back a couple years ago, Chris Kirk almost like quit the game of golf. I think we have talked a little bit about it, but had some issues with alcohol, and came back better and stronger, and now is winning, you know, one of the eight biggest events on the PGA Tour. He's kind of always there in these bigger events. Missed him this week, obviously, you know, didn't see that one on the Bet365 odds. Didn't have that one on the bingo card. Yeah, but shout out to him for, you know, working through those issues. We're seeing that more and more in sports, as in terms of guys like speaking out about it and then coming back. And it's kind of like just, it's kind of like a feel good story instead of a, you know, oh, woe is me. It's like, I got some issues, and you fix the issues, and now you're winning some big events. He also looks horrible without a beard. When I was doing some research on him, there was a couple pictures with him without a beard, and it just brings me back to, does anybody look better without a beard than with a beard? Does any grown man, let's start there, look better without a beard than a beard? I don't think so.
I think there's like a small group of dudes, like older guys that have nice, like a nice head of hair and like a somewhat good looking, like skinnier face. Those are the only like Robert De Niro, like when he shaves his beard, he looks good. There's certain dudes that I think can pull it off, but they have to be good looking. They have to have hair on top of their head, which mine is dwindling as we speak. I actually am feeling it fall out. And you have to have a somewhat like slender face. Like, you can't have a bowling ball sitting on top of your neck like I do. So I'm all the way out. My eight chins are covered up nice and cleanly by this. And it's even like I trimmed it probably a little bit too far, but there's not very many people that can pull off the no beard look. On the topic of things that didn't look good, did you see that hat that Ping made a lot of their dudes wear?
No, I didn't. Was Victor wearing it?
No, Victor wasn't, shockingly, because he had such a crazy outfit on that he was like, fuck you guys, I can't wear this shirt and this hat. Like, that's pretty much his standard. But Tyrrell Hatton's outfits, like in Sahith Theegala was wearing it, Tyrrell Hatton was wearing it, and it was, I mean, that it would have worked, but nobody's outfit picker was like, let's match this hat to like, let's make our outfit match the hat. They were just like, let's throw this crazy, you know, Hawaiian flower style hat on these dudes that are wearing,
it's,
you
so
know
bad. That's so, I'm looking at it right now, that is absolutely awful. You have to wear a solid shirt if you're going to wear a bucket like that. 100% of the time.
Exactly. They were putting, like, Tyrrell Hatton's got like horizontal two-tone like striped shirt on that has nothing to do with the hat.
Yeah,
and it's just like I was like, is somebody fucking with me? Like, I thought that was like photoshopped.
You know what's ironic though is he shot the low round of the tournament 62 wearing that fucking horrible getup. So shout out to him.
It was funny. I watched his post round interview and he was like bitching about, he's like, I hit a few shots here and there. And the commentator's like, you know, you shot 11 under, right? And he's like, yeah, everybody knows me for having a bad attitude. So I figured that's what I'm good at. So I'm just going to stick with it. But there was a scene, and I forget who the commentator was, but he had a chip shot that he kind of stuck in the ground in that thick Hawaiian grass, thicker than a bowl of oatmeal over there. You really got to get the wedge through it. And he stuck the wedge in the ground and the ball came up probably 15 feet short of the hole, you know, barely got on the green. He's kind of short-sighted and he like swings his club at it and then stomps on it multiple times. Like it looked like he was trying to put out a fire. So that was pretty fucking funny. Like he's like, and the commentator is like, oh, look at that. It was two swipes and two kicks. Like it was pretty funny.
Yeah. He's all timer love. He's worth the price of watching a tournament.
100%. But I would just prefer if these club manufacturers, like, remember when TaylorMade did that back in the day, like all the rocket balls and shit, that was just so gaudy and terrible.
There was just so many. They're looking back on it because in the moment it looks so sick. And then like I used to think like maybe I need a rocket balls driver. And now I'm just like fucking, I'm like that.
I'd rather hit a,
like somebody hit a Nike Sumo at one point. Like,
yeah. No. Oh, exactly. Oh, fuck off. That thing. Remember that Easton baseball bat sounding driver? Holy shit.
We would clap those.
But that was just like when I was 17 and I thought like an all white outfit looked good. Like, do you remember caddying for me in that junior event? And I had a white shirt, white pants, white shoes, white hat. Like, I don't know what the fuck I was going for, but, and I actually like, you know, it was circa 2010, 2011. So I actually thought it was kind of dope. Like I pulled it off, but now I look back and just shudder at the thought.
I'm still a big fan of white pants. I could always rock the white pants still yeah. to this day, but the full white get up is, I don't know. We should do like a evolution of golf outfits for just the everyday person. From like 2020 or 2010 to like 2020.
Well, speaking of, we didn't even touch on Jason Day throwing it back to the 90s with his Malbon first outfits of the year. For those of you who didn't hear, he signed. He, you know, I don't know what's going on with Adidas, but he left Adidas and is now sponsored by Malbon. For those of you who haven't heard of him, you know, it's kind of a newer brand that's a little bit more fashion forward, but it feels like the baggy clothes are back in now. Like he was rocking the baggy, like borderline pleated pants, the big baggy, like kind of cotton looking shirt. And so I beg the question, is this shit from the 90s going to be back in where like I'm wearing like what I already kind of dress like Tony Soprano a little bit. Like I like a big button down and, you know, some. The pants, I don't really rock those super loose pants, but I love a good like old school like button down shirt, like especially short sleeve. But this golf clothes, is this coming back to life?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fashion forward thing now is wearing shit from thrift stores in the 90s. Like it's like Macklemore was way ahead of his time in singing that song because that's what it's gotten to now. Like. I rarely get compliments on my outfits from other dudes, but 100% of the time it's on some retro shit that I own. That's Broncos, Nuggets, Avs. Like that's the only time. And yeah. It's always on that shit.
No, I had a, I have like an Iowa kind of like retro-ish hat. And this dude goes, I like your Iowa hat. He's like, is that new or is that like an original? And I was like, well, it's new. you know, because you have to ask people now, you're like, did they just make that? Or did you, because I have a few, like, I have a few of our grandpa's Iowa, like, hoodies and, like, crew neck sweatshirts that are, like, I have one from, like, the 2003, like, Fiesta Bowl or some shit. And that was gas, like, not maybe not the Fiesta Bowl, like the Citrus Bowl or whatever, but it was fire. Nathan just commented on Tiger Woods. We'll get into that more tomorrow and kind of project where we think he's going. But obviously, if you haven't seen the news on social media, Tiger Woods is and Nike have officially parted ways. Kind of a weird deal, but you know, that's Nike's kind of getting out of the game. So
yeah, they've lost Jason Day and Tiger Woods.
No, Jason Day was Adidas, I thought.
He used to be Nike. Maybe they lost him way in the past.
Yeah, I
isn't
mean,
Scottie Scheffler Nike?
Yeah, Scheffler's Nike.
I wonder if like got we'll talk about it more tomorrow. But I wonder if guys like Tiger are going to go to like a more put together fit of like, okay, their FootJoy shoes are obviously the best, and a lot of people like those. And then is it the hat shirt combo pants? You know, like I bet you every.
You're
every,
saying like a clothing free agent type of thing?
Yeah, or just like not being full head to toe in one outfit. You know, they just wear what they like versus like Tiger's made enough money on sponsorships in his career. I don't think he needs to go sign another deal. But I bet you this, every clothing company in the world that has any sort of connection to anyone around Tiger Woods' camp is making a red shirt right now in prep for that, you know, that sell of their wares towards him.
I have a bold prediction, and I'll just throw it out here right now if we want to clip this or what, but I think Tiger's going to go to Grayson, given the fact that he's boys with Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas is one of the main guys on the Grayson staff. It's a younger guy's line. The Wolf logo is just sick. And we actually walked by one of their retail shops in Detroit, and I will say it looked awesome. Like I actually wanted to go in there. I like their designs, really like forward thinking, like clean, but kind of out there at the same time. I could see Tiger rocking, some Grayson stuff going forward, but we'll see. I mean, that would be obviously whoever he goes to, it's going to be the biggest possible get they could have.
Yeah. And just like the, you know, Nike with him and Jordan 25 years ago on that Netflix show, this is like that reincarnate, because not only does it create like all the PGA Tour players that are playing now grew up watching Tiger. So then they're like, hey, you know, kind of, it's just kind of like a follow in line type of thing. So yeah, one clothing company is going to be selling a shitload of clothes in 2024 when that new logo and that, but now that video that went viral 20 years ago of the little Nike logo falling into the hole at the Masters is gone. It's over.
It's wild. And I even saw people selling like their old, like there, it was like a Nike Tiger Woods hat, for like $500 on eBay. People are just ridiculous. Like, I mean, I guess I respect the hustle, but give it a fucking rest. Like, you don't need to sell your 10-year-old, 15-year-old shit. Nobody's going to pay $500 for it.
Yeah. Well, somebody might. eBay is a wild spot.
some clothing designer's art guy is going to be getting ready to learn red, buddy.
Yeah. Time to learn red, buddy. Time to learn red and black.
Yeah.
Because that's what we need.
That's whoever it's going to be, they're going to have a blank red shirt with Tiger Woods' name on it that's going to do Billy's.
Exactly. I wonder if they get the Tiger Woods logo or not. The T-Dog.
That's cute. Yeah, I don't know if Tiger owns that. I'm sure, you know, he'd probably work it out with somebody. Because I think Jordan owns the Jordan logo, so.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Well, that wraps it up for us on the Winner's Circle Monday on Tuesday this week. My apologies for taking too long in Las Vegas. Won't happen again this year. But our normal episode of Big Drive Energy will come tomorrow. We will be live on our YouTube channel, 11 a.m. Mountain Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll talk more about the world of golf. We'll preview the upcoming event this weekend in Hawaii as well. The little Hawaiian swing continues on the PGA Tour. And we'll talk about other happenings in the golf world. So we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.
Peace.